always did the right thing. And it was that attitude that had made me love him so much. I had a similar nature. I too rushed in when others needed me, sometimes when I shouldn't have. Others called me crazy for it, but Dimitri had understood. He'd always understood me, and part of what we'd worked on was how to temper that impulsive need to run into danger with reason and calculation. I had a feeling no one else in this world would ever understand me like he did. I didn't notice how strongly the tears were running down my cheeks until I saw everyone looking at me. At first, I thought they considered me crazy for crying, but then I realized someone had asked me a question.
"They want you to talk about Dimitri's last days," Victoria said. "Tell us something. What he did? What he was like?"
I used my sleeve to clean my face and looked away, focusing on the bonfire. I'd spoken in front of others before without hesitation, but this was different.
I can't, I told Victoria, my voice strained and soft. "I can't talk about him."
She squeezed my hand.
"Please, they need to hear about him. They need to know. Just tell us anything. What was he like?"
He was your brother. You know.
"Yes," she said gently.
"But we want to know what you think he was like."
My eyes were still on the fire, watching the way the flames danced and shifted from orange to blue.
He was the best man I've ever met.
I stopped to gather myself, and Victoria used the opportunity to translate my words into Russian.
"And he was one of the best guardians. I mean, he was young compared to a lot of them, but everyone knew who he was. They all knew his reputation, and lots of people relied on him for advice. They called him a god, and whenever there was a fight or danger, he was always the first one to put himself out there. He never flinched. And a couple of months ago, when our school was attacked..." I choked up here a bit. The Belikovs had said they knew of the attack, that everyone knew about it. And from the faces here, it was true. I didn't need to elaborate on that night, on the horrors I'd seen. "That night," I continued, "Dimitri rushed out to face the Strigoi. He and I were together when we realized they were attacking. I wanted to stay and help him, but he wouldn't let me. He just told me to go, to run off and alert others, and he stayed behind, not knowing how many Strigoi he'd have to take on while I went for help. I still don't know how many he fought, but there were a bunch, and he took them all down alone." I dared to look up at the faces around me. Everyone was so quiet and still that I wondered if they were breathing. "It was so hard,"
I told them. Without realizing it, my voice had dropped to a whisper. I had to repeat myself more loudly.
"It was so hard. I didn't want to leave him, but I knew I had to. He taught me so much, but one of the biggest things was that we have to protect others. It was my duty to warn everyone else, even though I just wanted to stay with him. The whole time, my heart kept saying, 'Turn around, turn around, go to him.' But I knew what I had to do. And I also knew part of him was trying to keep me safe. And if the roles had been reversed, well, I would have made him run too."
I sighed, surprised I'd revealed so much of my heart. I switched back to business.
"Even when the other guardians joined him, Dimitri never backed down. He took down more Strigoi than almost anyone.
Christian and I had actually killed the most.
He was amazing."
I told them the rest of the story that I'd told the Belikovs, only I actually forced a little detail this time, telling them vividly just how brave and fierce he had been. The words hurt me as I spoke, and yet, it was almost a relief to get them out. I'd kept the memories of that night too close to me, but eventually, I had to tell them about the cave. And that was the worst.
"We'd trapped the escaping Strigoi in a cave. It had two entrances, and we came at them from both sides. Some of our people got trapped, though, and there were more Strigoi than we'd expected. We lost people. But we would have lost a lot more if Dimitri hadn't been there. He wouldn't leave until everyone was out. He didn't care about the risk to himself. He only knew he had to save others. I'd seen it in his eyes. That determination. Our plan had finally been to retreat as soon as we were all out. But I'd had the feeling he would have stayed and killed every Strigoi he could find. But he'd followed orders, too. Finally beginning his retreat when the others were safe. And in those last moments, just before the Strigoi had bitten him, Dimitri had met my eyes with a look so full of love that it was like that whole cave filled with light. His expression had said what we'd talked about earlier. We can be together, Rose, soon. We're almost there. And nothing will ever keep us apart again. I didn't mention that part, though. When I finished the rest of the tale, the faces of those gathered were grim but filled with awe and respect. Near the back of the crowd, I noticed Abe and his guardians listening as well. His expression was unreadable. Hard, but not angry or scary. Small cups began circulating through the group, and someone handed me one. A Dampier I didn't know, one of the few men present, stood up and raised his cup in the air. He spoke loudly and reverently, and I heard Dimitri's name mentioned several times. When he finished, he drank from the cup. Everyone else did too, so I followed suit. And nearly choked to death. It was like fire in liquid form. It took every ounce of strength I had to swallow it and not spray it on those around me.
What is this?
I asked, coughing. Victoria grinned. Vodka. I peered at the glass.
No, it isn't. I've had vodka before.
Not Russian vodka?
Apparently not. I forced the rest of the cup down out of respect to Dimitri, even though I had a feeling that if he were here, he'd be shaking his head at me. I thought I was done being in the spotlight after my story, but apparently not. Everyone kept asking me questions. They wanted to know more about Dimitri, more about what his life had been like recently. They also wanted to know about me and Dimitri as a couple. They all seemed to have figured out that Dimitri and I had been in love, and they were okay with it. I was asked about how we'd met, how long we'd been together. And the whole time, people kept refilling my cup. Determined not to look like an idiot again, I kept drinking until I could finally take the vodka down without coughing or spitting. The more I drank, the louder and more animated my stories became. My limbs started to tingle, and part of me knew this was all probably a bad idea. Okay, all of me knew it. Finally, people began to clear out. I had no idea what time it was, but I think it was the middle of the night. Maybe later. I stood as well, finding it much harder to do than I'd expected. The world wobbled, and my stomach wasn't very happy with me. Someone caught a hold of my arm and steadied me.
Easy, said Sydney. Don't push it.
Slowly, carefully, she led me toward the house.
God, I moaned. Do they use that stuff as rocket fuel?
No one made you keep drinking it.
Hey, don't get preachy. Besides, I had to be polite.
Sure, she said. We made it inside and then had the impossible task of getting up the stairs to the room Elena had given me. Each step was agony.
They all knew about me and Dimitri, I said, wondering if I'd be saying any of this sober. But I never told them we were together.
You didn't have to. It's written all over your face.
They acted like I was his widow or something.
You might as well be. We reached my room, and she helped me sit down on the bed. Not a lot of people get married around here. If you're with someone long enough, they figure it's almost the same. I sighed and stared off without any particular focus.
I miss him so much.
I'm sorry, she said. Will it ever get better? The question seemed to catch her by surprise.
I don't know.
Have you ever been in love? She shook her head. No. I wasn't sure if that made her lucky or not. I wasn't sure if all the bright days I'd had with Dimitri were worth the hurt I felt now. A moment later, I knew the truth.
Of course they were.
Huh? asked Sydney. I realized I'd spoken my thoughts out loud.
Nothing, just talking to myself. I should get some sleep.
Do you need anything else? Are you going to be sick?
I assessed my queasy stomach.
No, but thanks.
Okay.
And in her typically brusque way, she left, turning off the lights and shutting the door. I would have thought I'd pass out right away. Honestly, I wanted to. My heart had been opened up to too much of Dimitri tonight, and I wanted that pain to go away. I wanted blackness and oblivion. Instead, maybe because I was a glutton for punishment, my heart decided to finish the job and rip itself completely open. I went to visit Lissa. Chapter 10. Everyone had hit it off so well at lunch with Avery that the group had gotten together again that evening and had kind of a wild time. Lissa was thinking about that as she sat in her first period English class the next morning. They'd stayed up late last night, sneaking out past curfew. The memory brought a smile to Lissa's face, even as she stifled a yawn. I couldn't help but feel a tiny bit of jealousy. I knew Avery was responsible for Lissa's happiness, and that bothered me on a petty level. Yet, Avery's new friendship was also making me feel less guilty about leaving Lissa. Lissa yawned again. It was hard to concentrate on the scarlet letter while fighting a slight hangover. Avery seemed to have a never-ending supply of liquor. Adrian had taken to this right away, but Lissa had been a little more hesitant. She'd abandoned her partying days a long time ago, but she'd finally succumbed last night and drunk more glasses of wine than she really should have. It wasn't unlike my situation with the vodka, ironically enough. Both of us overindulging, despite being miles and miles apart. Suddenly, a high-pitched wail pierced the air. Lissa's head shot up, along with everyone else's in the class. In a corner of the room, a small fire alarm flashed and shrieked its warning. Naturally, some students started cheering while some pretended to be scared. The rest just looked surprised and waited. Lissa's instructor also looked a little caught off guard, and after a quick examination, Lissa decided this wasn't a planned alarm. Teachers usually had a heads up when there were drills, and Ms. Malloy didn't wear the usual weary expression teachers had when trying to figure out how much time the drill would cut from their lessons.
"Up and at 'em," said Ms. Malloy in annoyance, grabbing a clipboard. "You know where to go."
Fire drill procedure was pretty standard. Lissa followed the others and fell in step with Christian.
"Did you set this up?" she teased.
"Nope. Wish I had, though. This class is killing me."
"You? I have the worst headache ever."
He gave her a knowing grin.
"Let that be a lesson to you, little Miss Lush."
She made a face in return and gave him a light punch. They reached their class's meeting spot out on the quad and joined in the semblance of a line the others were trying to form. Ms. Malloy arrived and checked everyone off on her clipboard, satisfied no one had been left behind.
"I don't think this was planned," said Lissa.
"Agreed," said Christian. "Which means even if there's no fire, it might take a while."
"Well then, no use waiting around, huh?"
Christian and Lissa turned around in surprise at the voice behind them and saw Avery. She wore a purple sweater dress and black heels that seemed totally out of place on the wet grass.
"What are you doing here?" asked Lissa. "Figured you'd be in your room." "Whatever, it's so boring there. I had to come liberate you guys."
"You did this?"
asked Christian, slightly impressed. Avery shrugged.
"I told you, I was bored. Now come on while it's still chaotic."
Christian and Lissa exchanged glances.
"Well," said Lissa slowly, "I suppose they did already take attendance."
"Hurry," said Avery. Her excitement was contagious, and feeling bold, Lissa hurried after her, Christian in tow. With all the milling students, no one noticed them cutting across the campus until they reached the outside of guest housing. Simon stood leaning against the door, and Lissa stiffened. They were busted.
"Everything set?" Avery asked him.
Simon, definitely the strong and silent type, gave a swift nod as his only answer before straightening up. He stuffed his hands into his coat pockets and walked off. Lissa stared in amazement.
He just let us go? And is he in on it?"
Simon wasn't on campus as a teacher, but still,
That didn't necessarily mean he'd let students skip out on class because of a faked fire drill.
Avery grinned mischievously, watching him go.
We've been together for a while. He's got better things to do than babysit us.
She led them inside, but instead of going to her room, they cut off to a different section of the building and went somewhere I knew well. Adrian's room. Avery beat on the door.
Hey, Ivashkov, open up!
Lissa slapped a hand over her mouth to smother her giggles.
So much for stealth. Everyone's going to hear you.
I need him to hear me,
Avery argued. She kept pounding on the door and yelling, and finally, Adrian answered. His hair stuck up at odd angles, and he had dark circles under his eyes. He'd drunk twice as much as Lissa last night.
What?
He blinked.
Shouldn't you guys be in class? Oh, God, I didn't sleep that much, did I?
Let us in, said Avery, pushing past. We've got refugees from a fire here.
She flounced onto his couch, making herself at home while he continued staring. Lissa and Christian joined her.
Avery sprang the fire alarm, explained Lissa.
Nice work, said Adrian, collapsing into a fluffy chair. But why'd you have to come here? Is this the only place that's not burning down?
Avery batted her eyelashes at him.
Aren't you happy to see us?
He eyed her speculatively for a moment.
Always happy to see you.
Lissa was normally pretty straight-laced about this kind of thing, but something about it amused her. It was so wild, so silly. It was a break from all her recent worries.
It's not going to take them that long to figure it out, you know. They could be letting everyone in right now.
They could be, agreed Avery, putting her feet up on the coffee table. But I have it on good authority that another alarm is going to go off in school once they open the doors.
How the hell did you manage that?
Asked Christian.
Top secret.
Adrian rubbed his eyes and was clearly amused by this, despite the abrupt wake-up.
You can't pull fire alarms all day, Lazar.
Actually, I have it on good authority that once they give the all-clear on a second alarm, a third's going to go off.
Lissa laughed out loud, though a lot of it was due more to the guy's reactions and less to Avery's announcement. Christian, in fits of antisocial rebellion, had set people on fire. Adrian spent most of his days drunk and chain-smoking. For a cute society girl like Avery to astonish them, something truly remarkable had to happen. Avery looked very pleased at having outdone them.
If the interrogation's over now, she said, are you going to offer your guests any refreshments?
Adrian stood up and yawned.
Fine, fine, you insolent girl. I'll make coffee.
With a kick?
She inclined her head toward Adrian's liquor cabinet.
You've got to be kidding, said Christian. Do you even have a liver left?
Avery wandered over to the cabinet and picked up a bottle of something. She held it out to Lissa.
You game?
Even Lissa's morning rebelliousness had limits. The wine headache still throbbed in her skull.
Ugh, no.
Cowards,
said Avery. She turned back to Adrian.
Well then, Mr. Ivashkov, you'd best put on the pot. I always like a little coffee with my brandy.
Not long after that, I faded away from Lissa's head and drifted back into my own, returning to the blackness of sleep and ordinary dreams. It was short-lived, however, seeing as a loud pounding soon jerked me into consciousness. My eyes flew open, and a deep, searing pain shot through the back of my skull, the after-effects of that toxic vodka, no doubt. Lissa's hangover had nothing on mine. I started to close my eyes, wanting to sink back under and let sleep heal the worst of my pain. Then, I heard the pounding again. And worse, my whole bed shook violently. Someone was kicking it. Opening my eyes again, I turned and found myself staring into Yeva's shrewd, dark eyes. If Sydney had met many Dompiers like Yeva, I can understand why she thought our race were minions of hell. Pursing her lips, Yeva kicked the bed again.
Hey! I cried. I'm awake, okay?
Yeva muttered something in Russian, and Paul peered around from behind her, translating.
She says you're not awake until you're actually out of bed and standing up.
And with no more warning, that sadistic old woman continued kicking the bed. I jerked upright, and the world spun around me. I'd said this before, but this time, I really meant it. I was never going to drink again.
No good ever came from it. The covers looked awfully tempting to my agonized body, but a few more kicks from Yeva's pointy-toed boots made me shoot up off the bed.
Okay, okay, are you happy now? I'm up.
Yeva's expression didn't change, but at least she stopped with the kicking. I turned to Paul. What's going on?
Grandmother says you have to go with her.
Where?
She says you don't need to know.
I started to say that I wasn't following that crazy old wench anywhere, but after one look at her scary face, I thought better of it. I didn't put it past her to be able to turn people into toads. Fine, I said. I'll be ready to go once I shower and change. Paul translated my words, but Yeva shook her head and spoke again.
She says there's no time, he explained. We have to go now.
Can I at least brush my teeth? She allowed that small concession, but a change of clothes was apparently out of the question. It was just as well. Each step I took made me feel woozy, and I probably would have passed out doing something as complicated as dressing and undressing. The clothes didn't smell or anything either. They were mostly just wrinkled from where I'd fallen asleep in them. When I got downstairs, I saw that no one else was awake except Elena. She was washing leftover dishes from last night and seemed surprised to see me up. That made two of us.
It's early for you, isn't it?
She asked. I turned and caught sight of the kitchen clock. I gasped. It was only about 4 hours after I'd gone to bed.
Good God, is the sun even up?
Amazingly, it was. Elena offered to make me breakfast, but again, Yeva reiterated our time crunch. My stomach seemed to simultaneously want and loathe food, but I couldn't say if abstaining was a good thing or not.
Whatever, I said. Let's just go and get this over with.
Yeva walked into the living room and returned a few moments later with a large satchel. She handed it to me expectantly. I shrugged and took it, hanging it over one shoulder. It clearly had stuff in it, but it wasn't that heavy. She went back out to the other room and returned with another tote bag. I took this one, too, and hung it over the same shoulder, balancing both of them. This one was heavier, but my back didn't complain too much. When she left for a third time and returned with a giant box, I started to get irate.
What is this?
I demanded, taking it from her. It felt like it had bricks in it.
Grandmother needs you to carry some things, Paul told me.
Yes, I said through gritted teeth. I sort of figured that out 50 pounds ago. Yeva gave me one more box, stacking it on top of the other. It wasn't as heavy, but by this point, it honestly didn't matter. Elena shot me a sympathetic look, shook her head, and returned silently to her dishes, apparently not about to argue with Yeva. Yeva set off after that, and I followed obediently, trying to both hold the boxes and not let the bags fall off my shoulder. It was a heavy load, one my hungover body really didn't want, but I was strong enough that I figured it wouldn't be a problem to get into town or wherever she was leading me. Paul ran along at my side, apparently there to let me know if Yeva found anything along the road she wanted me to carry, too. It seemed like spring was charging into Siberia far faster than it ever did into Montana. The sky was clear, and the morning sun was heating things up surprisingly fast. It was hardly summer weather, but it was definitely enough to notice. It would have made very uncomfortable walking weather for a Maroi.
"Do you know where we're going?" I asked Paul.
"No,"
he said cheerfully. For someone so old, Yeva could move at a pretty good pace, and I found myself having to hurry to keep up with her with my load. At one point, she glanced back and said something that Paul translated as,
"She's kind of surprised that you can't move faster."
"Yeah, well, I'm kind of surprised that no one else can carry any of this," he translated again.
"She says if you're really such a famous Dragoi killer, then this shouldn't be a problem."
I was filled with great relief when downtown came into sight. Only we kept walking past it.
"Oh, come on," I said. "Where the hell are we going?"
Without giving me a backward glance, Yeva rattled off something.
"Grandmother says Uncle Dimka never would have complained so much," Paul said.
None of this was Paul's fault. He was just the messenger. Yet every time he spoke, I kind of wanted to kick him. Nonetheless, I kept carrying my burden and didn't say anything else for the rest of the walk. Yeva was right to a certain extent. I was a Strigoi hunter, and it was true that Dimitri would have never complained about some old lady's crazy whims. He would have done his duty patiently. I tried to summon him up in my mind and draw strength from him. I thought about that time in the cabin again, thought about the way his lips had felt on mine, and the wonderful scent of his skin when I pressed closer to him. I could hear his voice once more, murmuring in my ear that he loved me, that I was beautiful, that I was the only one. Thinking of him didn't take away the discomfort of my journey with Yeva, but it made it a little more bearable. We walked for almost an hour more before reaching a small house, and I was ready to fall over in relief, soaked in sweat. The house was one floor, made of plain, weather-worn brown boards. The windows, however, were surrounded on three sides by exquisite, highly stylized blue shutters overlaid with a white design. It was the same sort of flashy use of color I'd seen on the buildings in Moscow and St. Petersburg. Yeva knocked on the door. At first there was only silence, and I panicked, thinking we'd have to turn right around and head back. Finally, a woman answered the door, a Maroi woman. She was maybe 30, very pretty, with high cheekbones and strawberry blonde hair. She exclaimed in surprise at seeing Yeva, smiling and greeting her in Russian. Glancing over at Paul and me, the woman quickly stepped aside and gestured us in. She switched to English as soon as she realized I was American. All these bilingual people were kind of amazing. It wasn't something I saw very often in the U.S. She pointed to a table and told me to set everything there, which I did with relief. "My name's Oksana," she said, shaking my hand. "My husband, Mark, is in the garden and should be in soon." "I'm Rose," I told her. Oksana offered us chairs. Mine was wooden and straight-backed, but at the moment, it felt like a down-filled bed. I sighed happily and wiped the sweat off my brow. Meanwhile, Oksana unpacked the things I'd carried. The bags were filled with leftovers from the funeral. The top box contained some dishes and pots, which Paul explained had been borrowed from Oksana some time ago. Oksana finally reached the bottom box, and so help me, it was filled with garden bricks. "You have got to be kidding," I said. Across the living room, Yeva looked very smug. Oksana was delighted by the gifts. "Oh, Mark will be happy to have these," she smiled at me. "It was very sweet of you to carry these that whole way."
"Happy to help," I said stiffly.
The back door opened and a man walked in. Mark, presumably. He was tall and stockily built, his graying hair indicating an age greater than Oksana's. He washed his hands in the kitchen sink and then turned to join us. I nearly gasped when I saw his face and discovered something stranger than the age difference. He was a dompier. For a moment, I wondered if this was someone else and not her husband, Mark. But that was the name Oksana introduced him with, and the truth hit me. A Maroi and dompier married couple? Sure, our two races hooked up all the time. But marriage? It was very scandalous in the Maroi world. I tried to keep the surprise off my face and behave as politely as I could. Oksana and Mark seemed very interested in me, though she did most of the talking. Mark simply watched, curiosity all over his face. My hair was down, so my tattoos couldn't have given away my unpromised status. Maybe he was just wondering how an American girl had found her way out to the middle of nowhere. Maybe he thought I was a new blood whore recruit. By my third glass of water, I began to feel better. It was around that time that Oksana said we should eat, and by then, my stomach was ready for it. Oksana and Mark prepared the food together, dismissing any offers of help. Watching the couple work was fascinating. I had never seen such an efficient team. They never got in each other's way and never needed to talk about what needed doing next. They just knew. Despite the remote location, the kitchen's contents were modern, and Oksana placed a dish of some sort of potato casserole in the microwave. Mark's back was to her while he rummaged in the refrigerator, but as soon as she hit start, he said,
"No, it doesn't need to be that long."
I blinked in surprise, glancing back and forth between them. He hadn't even seen what time she'd selected. Then I got it. "You're bonded," I exclaimed. Both looked at me in equal surprise.
"Yes. Didn't Yeva tell you?"
Oksana asked. I shot a quick look at Yeva, who was again wearing that annoyingly self-satisfied look on her face. "No, Yeva hasn't been very forthcoming this morning."
"Most everyone around here knows,"
Oksana said, returning to her work.
Then you're a spirit user. That made her pause again. She and Mark exchanged startled looks.
That, she said, is not something that's widely known.
Most people think you haven't specialized, right?
How did you know?
Because it was exactly how it had been for Lissa and me. Stories of bonds had always existed in Maroi folklore, but how bonds formed had always been a mystery. It was generally believed they just happened. Like Oksana, Lissa had generally been regarded as a non-specializing Maroi, one who didn't have any special ability with one element. We realize now, of course, that bonding only occurred with spirit users, when they saved the lives of others. Something in Oksana's voice told me she wasn't really all that surprised I knew. I couldn't figure out how she'd realized that, however, and I was too stunned by my discovery to say anything else. Lissa and I had never ever met another bonded pair. The only such two we knew about were the legendary Vladimir and Anna, and those stories were shrouded by centuries of incomplete history, making it difficult to know fact from fiction. The only other leads we had to the world of spirit were Ms. Karp, a former teacher who went insane, and Adrian. Until now, he had been our biggest discovery, a spirit user who was more or less stable, depending on how you looked at it. When the meal was ready, spirit never came up. Oksana led the conversation, keeping to light topics and jumping between languages. I studied her and Mark as I ate, looking for any signs of instability. I saw none. They seemed like perfectly pleasant, perfectly ordinary people. If I hadn't known what I did, I would have had no reason to suspect anything. Oksana didn't seem depressed or unhinged. Mark hadn't inherited that vile darkness that sometimes seeped into me. My stomach welcomed the food, and the last of my headache faded away. At one point, though, a strange sensation swept through me. It was disorienting, like fluttering in my head, and a wave of heat and then ice coursing through me. The feeling disappeared as quickly as it came on, and I hoped it'd be the last of that demon vodka's ill effects. We finished eating, and I jumped up to help. Oksana shook her head.
No, there's no need. You should go with Mark.
Huh? I asked. He dabbed at his face with a napkin and then stood up.
Yes, let's go out to the garden.
I started to follow, then paused to glance back at Yeva. I expected her to chastise me for abandoning the dishes. Instead, I found no smug or disapproving looks. Her expression was knowing, almost expectant. Something about it sent a shiver down my back, and I recalled Victoria's words. Yeva had dreamed of my arrival. The garden Mark led me to was much bigger than I expected, enclosed in a thick fence and lined with trees. New leaves hung on them, blocking the worst of the heat. Lots of bushes and flowers were already in bloom, and here and there, young shoots were well on their way to adulthood. It was beautiful, and I wondered if Oksana had had a hand in it. Lissa was able to make plants grow with spirit. Mark gestured me over to a stone bench. We sat down side by side, and silence fell.
So, he said, what would you like to know?
Wow, you don't waste time.
I don't see any point in it. You must have lots of questions. I'll do my best to answer.
How did you know, I asked, that I'm Shadowkissed too? You did, right? He nodded. Yeva told us. Okay, that was a surprise. Yeva?
She can sense things. Things the rest of us can't. She doesn't always know what she's sensing, however. She only knew there was a strange feel to you, and she'd only ever felt that around one other person. So she brought you to me.
Seems like she could have done that without me having to carry a household's worth of stuff. This made him laugh.
Don't take it personally. She was testing you. She wanted to see if you're a worthy match for her grandson.
What's the point? He's dead now. I nearly choked on the words.
True, but for her, it's still important. And, by the way, she does think you're worthy.
She has a funny way of showing it. I mean, aside from bringing me to meet you, I guess. He laughed again.
Even without her, Oksana would have known what you are as soon as she met you. Being shadow-kissed has an effect on the aura.
So she can see auras, too, I murmured. What else can she do? She must be able to heal, or you wouldn't be shadow-kissed. Does she have super compulsion? Can she walk dreams? That caught him off guard.
Her compulsion is strong, yes. But what do you mean, walk dreams?
Like, she'd be able to enter someone else's mind when they're asleep. Anyone's mind, not just yours. Then they could have conversations just as if they were together. My friend can do it. Mark's expression told me that was new to him.
Your friend? Your bondmate?
Bondmate? I'd never heard that term. It was weird sounding, but it made sense. No, another spirit user.
Another? How many do you know?
3, technically. Well, 4 now, counting Oksana. Mark turned away, staring absent-mindedly at a cluster of pink flowers.
That many? That's incredible. I've only met one other spirit user, and that was years ago. He too was bonded to his guardian. That guardian died, and it ripped him apart. He still helped us when Oksana and I were trying to figure things out.
I braced myself for my own death all the time, and I feared for Lyssa's. Yet it had never occurred to me just what it would be like with a bond. How would it affect the other person? What would it be like to have a gaping hole where once you'd been intimately linked to someone else?
He never mentioned walking dreams either, Mark continued.
He chuckled again, friendly lines crinkling up around his blue eyes.
I thought I would be helping you, but maybe you're here to help me.
I don't know, I said doubtfully. I think you guys have more experience at this than we do.
Where's your bondmate?
Back in the U.S. I didn't have to elaborate, but somehow I needed to tell him the whole truth. I left her. He frowned.
Left as in you simply traveled, or left as in you abandoned her?
Abandoned. The word was like a slap in the face, and suddenly, all I could envision was that last day I'd seen her, when I'd left her crying. I had things to do, I said evasively.
Yes, I know, Oksana told me.
Told you what? Now he hesitated.
She shouldn't have done it. She tries not to.
Done what? I exclaimed, uneasy for reasons I couldn't explain.
She brushed your mind, during brunch.
I thought back and suddenly recalled the tickling in my head, the heat rolling over me. What does that mean, exactly?
An aura can tell a spirit user about someone's personality, but Oksana can also dig further, reaching in and actually reading more specific information about a person. Sometimes she can tie that ability into compulsion, but the results are very, very powerful and wrong. It's not right to do that to someone you have no bond with.
It took me a moment to process that. Neither Lyssa nor Adrian could read the thoughts of others. The closest Adrian could come to someone's mind was the dreamwalking. Lyssa couldn't do that, not even for me. I could feel her, but the opposite wasn't true.
Oksana could feel... Oh, I don't know how to explain it. There's a recklessness in you. You're on some sort of quest. There's vengeance written all over your soul.
He suddenly reached over and lifted my hair up, peering at my neck.
Just as I thought, you're unpromised.
I jerked my head back. Why is that such a big deal? That whole town back there is filled with Dampiers who aren't guardians. I still thought Mark was a nice guy, but being preached to always irritated me.
Yes, but they've chosen to settle down. You and others like you. You become vigilantes of sorts. You're obsessed with hunting Strigoi on your own, with personally setting out to right the wrongs that whole race has brought down upon us. That can only lead to trouble. I see it all the time.
All the time? I asked, startled.
Why do you think guardian numbers are dwindling? They're leaving to have homes and families. Or they're going off like you, still fighting but answering to no one. Unless they're hired to be bodyguards or Strigoi hunters.
Dompiers for hire? I suddenly began to understand how a non-royal like Abe had gotten his bodyguards. Money could make anything happen, I suppose. I've never heard of anything like that.
Of course not. You think the Moroi and other guardians want that widely known? Want to dangle that in front of you as an option?
I don't see what's so wrong with Strigoi hunting. We're always defensive, not offensive, when it comes to Strigoi. Maybe if more Dompiers set out after them, they wouldn't be such a problem.
Perhaps, but there are different ways of going about that. Some better than others. And when you're going out like you are, with a heart filled with sorrow and revenge, that's not one of the better ways. It'll make you sloppy. And the Chateau Kiss darkness will just complicate things.
I crossed my arms over my chest and stared stonily ahead. Yeah, well, it's not like I can do much about that. He turned to me, expression surprised once more.
Why don't you just have your bondmate heal the darkness out of you?
Chapter 11. I stared at Mark for several long seconds. Finally, stupidly, I asked, "Did you say heal?" Mark stared at me in equal surprise.
"Yes, of course. She can heal other things, right? Why not this?"
"Because," I frowned, "that doesn't make any sense. The darkness? All the bad side effects? Those come from Lyssa. If she could just heal it, why wouldn't she heal it out of herself?"
"Because when it's in her, it's too ingrained, too tied into her being. She can't heal it the way she can other things. But once your bond has pulled it into you, it's like any other sickness."
My heart was pounding in my chest. What he was suggesting was too ridiculously easy. No, it was just ridiculous, period. There was no way after all that we'd been through that Lyssa could heal that rage and depression the way she could a cold or a broken leg. Victor Dajkov, despite his wicked schemes, had known an astonishing amount about spirit and had explained it to us. The other four elements were more physical in nature, but spirit came from the mind and soul. To use that mental energy, to be able to do such powerful things, couldn't be done without devastating side effects. We'd been fighting those side effects from the beginning, first in Lyssa and then in me. They couldn't just go away. "If that were possible," I said quietly, "then everyone would have done it. Ms. Karp wouldn't have lost her mind. Anna wouldn't have committed suicide. What you're saying is too easy." Mark didn't know who I was talking about, but clearly it didn't matter for what he wanted to express.
"You're right. It's not easy at all. It requires a careful balance, a circle of trust and strength between two people. It took Oksana and me a long time to learn. Many hard years."
His face darkened, and I could only imagine what those years had been like. My short time with Lyssa had been bad enough. They'd had to live with this a lot longer than we had. It had to have been unbearable at times. Slowly, wonderingly, I dared to give credence to his words. "But now you guys are okay?" There was a flicker of a wry smile on his lips.
"I'd hardly say we're perfectly okay. There's only so much she can do, but it makes life manageable. She spaces out the healings as long as we can handle it, since it takes a lot out of her. It's draining and it limits her overall power."
"What do you mean?" He shrugged.
"She can still do the other things. Healing, compulsion, but not to the level she would if she wasn't always healing me."
My hope faltered. "Oh, then I couldn't. I couldn't do that to Lyssa."
"Compared to what she's doing to you? Rose, I have a feeling she'd think it was a fair trade."
I thought back to our last meeting. I thought about how I'd left her there, despite her begging. I thought about the lows she'd been experiencing in my absence. I thought about how she refused to heal Dimitri when I thought there might still be hope for him. We'd both been bad friends. I shook my head.
I don't know, I said in a small voice. I don't know if she would.
Mark gave me a long, level look, but he didn't push me on the matter. He glanced up at the sun, almost as if he could tell the time from it. He probably could. He had that surviving in the wilderness kind of feel to him.
The others will wonder what happened to us. Before we go,
he reached into his pocket and pulled out a small, plain silver ring.
Learning to heal will take time. What worries me the most right now is this vigilante mood you're in. The darkness is only going to make it worse. Take this.
He extended the ring to me. I hesitated and then reached for it. What is it?
Oksana infused it with spirit. It's a healing charm.
Once again, shock ran through me. Maroi charmed objects with elements all the time. Stakes were charmed with all four of the physical elements, making them lethal to Strigoi. Victor had charmed a necklace with earth magic, using the base nature of earth to turn the necklace into a lust charm. Even Sydney's tattoo was a charm of sorts. I suppose there was no reason that spirit couldn't charm objects too. But it had never occurred to me, probably because Lissa's powers were still too new and too foreign. What's it do? I mean, what kind of healing?
It'll help with your moods. It can't get rid of them, but it'll lessen them. Help you think more clearly. Might keep you out of trouble. Oksana makes these for me to help between healings.
I started to slip it on, but he shook his head.
Save it for when you really feel out of control. The magic won't last forever. It fades just like any other charm.
I stared at the ring. My mind suddenly opened to all sorts of new possibilities. A few moments later, I slipped it into my coat pocket. Paul stuck his head out the back door.
Grandmother wants to leave now, he told me. She wants to know why you're taking so long, and said to ask why you'd make someone as old as her keep waiting and suffering with her back.
I recalled how fast Yeva had been walking while I struggled to keep up with my load. Her back hadn't seemed all that bad to me, but again, I remembered that Paul was only the messenger and spared him my commentary. Okay, I'll be right there. When he was gone, I shook my head. It's hard being worthy. I moved toward the door, then gave Mark a backward glance, as a random thought occurred to me. You're telling me that going off on your own is bad, but you aren't a guardian either. He smiled at me again, one of those sad, wry smiles.
I used to be. Then Oksana saved my life. We bonded and eventually fell in love. I couldn't stand to be separated from her after that, and the guardians would have assigned me elsewhere. I had to go.
Was it hard to leave them?
Very. Our age difference made it even more scandalous.
A strange chill ran through me. Mark and Oksana were the embodiment of the two halves of my life. They fought against a shadow-kissed bond as Lissa and I did, and also faced the same condemnation for their relationship that Dimitri and I had. Mark continued.
But sometimes we have to listen to our hearts. And even though I left, I'm not out there recklessly going after Strigoi. I'm an old man living with the woman he loves and tending his garden. There's a difference. Don't forget that.
My mind was reeling when I returned to the Belikov house. Without the bricks, the walk back had been a lot easier. It had given me a chance to ponder Mark's words. I felt like I'd received a lifetime of information in a one-hour conversation. Elena was going about the house, doing her normal tasks of cooking and cleaning. While I would personally never want to spend my days doing those sorts of domestic duties, I had to admit there was something comforting about always having someone who was around, ready to cook and worry about me on a daily basis. I knew it was a purely selfish desire, just as I knew my own mom was doing important things with her life. I shouldn't judge her. Still, it made me feel warm and cared for to have Elena treat me like a daughter when she hardly knew me. Are you hungry? She asked automatically. I think one of the greatest fears in her life was that someone might go hungry in her home. Sydney's perpetual lack of appetite had been a nonstop worry for Elena. I hid a smile. No, we ate at Mark and Oksana's.
Ah, that's where you were. They're good people.
Where is everyone? I asked. The house was unusually quiet.
Sonia and Carolina are at work. Victoria's out at a friend's, but she'll be glad you're back.
What about Sydney?
She left a little while ago. She said she was going back to St. Petersburg.
What? I exclaimed. Left for good? Just like that? Sydney had a blunt nature, but this was abrupt even for her.
The alchemists, well, they're always on the move.
Alana handed me a piece of paper.
She left these for you.
I took the note and immediately opened it. Sydney's handwriting was neat and precise. Somehow this didn't surprise me. Rose. I'm sorry I had to leave so quickly, but when the alchemists tell me to jump, well, I jump. I've hitched a ride back to that farm town we stayed in so I can pick up the Red Hurricane, and then I'm off to St. Petersburg. Apparently, now that you've been delivered to Baya, they don't need me to stick around anymore. I wish I could tell you more about Abe and what he wants from you. Even if I was allowed to, there isn't much to say. In some ways, he's as much a mystery to me as he is to you. Like I said, a lot of the business he deals in is illegal, both among humans and Maroi. The only time he gets directly involved with people is when something relates to that business, or if it's a very, very special case. I think you're one of those cases, and even if he doesn't intend you harm, he might want to use you for his own purposes. It could be as simple as him wanting to contract you as a bodyguard, seeing as you're rogue. Maybe he wants to use you to get to others. Maybe this is all part of someone else's plan. Someone who's even more mysterious than him. Maybe he's doing someone a favor. Zmei can be dangerous or kind, all depending on what he needs to accomplish. I never thought I'd care enough to say this to a Dampier, but be careful. I don't know what your plans are now, but I have a feeling trouble follows you around. Call me if there's anything I can help with. But if you go back to the big cities to hunt Trigoy, don't leave any more bodies unattended. All the best. Sydney. P.S. The Red Hurricane is what I named the car. P.P.S. Just because I like you, it doesn't mean I still don't think you're an evil creature of the night. You are. Her cell phone number was added at the bottom, and I couldn't help but smile. Since we'd ridden to Baya with Abe and his guardians, Sydney had had to leave the car behind, which had traumatized her almost as much as the Strigoi. I hoped the alchemist would let her keep it. I shook my head, amused in spite of her warnings about Abe. The Red Hurricane. As I headed upstairs to my room, my smile faded. Despite her abrasive attitude, I was going to miss Sydney. She might not exactly be a friend. Or was she? But in this brief time, I'd come to regard her as a constant in my life. I didn't have many of those anymore. I felt adrift, unsure what to do now. I'd come here to bring peace to Dimitri, and had only ended up bringing grief to his family. And if what everyone said was true, I wasn't going to find many Strigoi here in Baya. Somehow I couldn't picture Dimitri wandering the road and farms for the occasional prey. Even as a Strigoi, and it killed me to think those words, Dimitri would have a purpose. If he wasn't returning to the familiar sights of his hometown, then he would be doing something else meaningful, in as much as a Strigoi could. Sydney's comment in the note had verified what I kept hearing over and over. Strigoi were in the cities. But which one? Where would Dimitri go? Now I was the one without a purpose. On top of it all, I couldn't help but replay Mark's words. Was I really on an insane vigilante mission? Was I foolishly rushing to my death? Or was I foolishly rushing into nothing? Was I doomed to spend the rest of my days wandering? Alone? Sitting on my bed, I felt my mood plummet and knew I had to distract myself. I was too susceptible to dark emotions as long as Lyssa used spirit. I didn't need to further encourage them. I slipped on the ring that Mark had given me, hoping it would bring some sort of clarity and tranquility. I felt no noticeable difference, though, and decided to seek peace from that place I always did, Lyssa's mind. She was with Adrian, and the two were practicing spirit again. After some initial bumps in the road, Adrian was proving a quick study at healing. That had been the first of Lyssa's powers to manifest, and it always irked her that he made more progress in what she had to teach him than vice versa. "I'm running out of things for you to heal," she said, setting some tiny potted plants onto a table. "Unless we start cutting off limbs or something." Adrian smiled.
I used to tease Rose about that, how I was going to impress her by healing amputees or something equally absurd.
Oh, and I'm sure she had a smart-ass response for you each time.
Yes, yes, she did.
His face was fond as he recalled the memory. There was a part of me that was always insanely curious to hear them talk about me. Yet at the same time, I always felt bad at the grief my name seemed to invoke. Lissa groaned and stretched out on the carpeted floor. They were in a dorm lounge, and curfew was swiftly approaching. I want to talk to her, Adrian.
You can't, he said.
There was an unusual seriousness in his voice.
I know she still checks in on you. That's the closest you'll get to talking to her. And honestly, that's not so bad. You can tell her exactly how you feel.
Yeah, but I want to hear her talk back like you do in your dreams. This made him smile again.
She does plenty of talking back, believe me.
Lissa sat straight. Do it now.
Do what now?
Go visit her dreams. You always try to explain it to me, but I've never actually seen it. Let me watch. He stared at a loss for words.
That's kind of voyeuristic.
Adrian, I want to learn this, and we've tried everything else. I can feel the magic around you sometimes. Just do it, okay?
He started to protest again, but then bit off his comment after studying her face for a moment.
Her words had been sharp and demanding, very uncharacteristic for her.
Okay, I'll try.
The whole idea of Adrian trying to get into my head while I was watching him through Lissa's head was surreal, to say the least. I didn't quite know what to expect from him. I'd always wondered if he had to be asleep or at least have his eyes closed. Apparently not. He instead stared off at nothing, his eyes going vacant as his mind left the world around him. Through Lissa's eyes, I could see some of the magic radiating off him and his aura, and she tried to analyze each strand. Then, without warning, all the magic faded. He blinked and shook his head.
Sorry, I can't do it.
Why not?
Probably because she's awake. Did you learn anything by watching?
A little. Probably would have been more useful if you'd actually made the connection. Again, Lissa had that petulant tone.
She could be anywhere in the world, you know, on any schedule.
His words were smothered by a yawn.
Maybe we can try at different times of the day. I've been getting her. Actually, close to this time. Or sometimes I catch her really early in the day.
She could be close by then, said Lissa.
Or on a human daylight schedule in some other part of the world.
Her enthusiasm dropped. Right. That too.
How come you guys never look like you're working?
Christian strolled into the room, looking amused at Lissa sitting on the floor and Adrian sprawling on the couch. Standing behind Christian was someone I hadn't thought I'd see anytime soon. Adrian, who could detect women a mile away, also immediately noticed the newcomer.
Where'd you get the jailbait? He asked.
Christian shot Adrian a warning look.
This is Jill.
Jill Mastrano allowed herself to be nudged forward, her light green eyes impossibly wide as she looked around.
Jill, this is Lissa and Adrian.
Jill was one of the last people I'd expected to see here. I'd met her a little over a month ago. She was in 9th grade, which meant she'd be here on the upper campus in the fall. She had the same super slim build that most Maroi had, but it was paired with height that was impressive even by vampiric standards. It made her look rail thin. Her hair fell in light brown curls to the middle of her back and would be beautiful when she learned how to style it properly. For now, it was kind of messy, and her overall impression, while cute, was kind of awkward.
Hi, she said, looking from face to face. As far as she was concerned, these were Maroi Gold Star celebrities. She'd nearly passed out when she first met me and Dimitri, thanks to our reputations. From her expression, she was in a similar state now.
Jill wants to learn how to use her power for good instead of evil,
said Christian with an exaggerated wink. That was his coy way of saying Jill wanted to learn how to fight with her magic. She'd expressed the interest to me, and I'd told her to find Christian. I was glad she'd had the courage to take me up on my advice. Christian was a campus celebrity, too, albeit an infamous one.
Another recruit? Asked Lissa, shaking her head. Think you'll keep this one around?
Jill gave Christian a startled look.
What's that mean?
After the attack, lots of people said they wanted to learn to fight with magic, Christian explained. So they found me, and we worked together. once or twice. Then everyone faded away once it got hard, and they realized they had to keep practicing.
It doesn't help that you're a mean teacher, pointed out Lissa.
And so now you've got to recruit among children, said Adrian solemnly.
Hey, said Jill indignantly, I'm 14. Immediately, she flushed at having spoken so boldly to him. He found it amusing, as he did so many other things.
My mistake, he said.
What's your element?
Water.
Fire and water, huh?
Adrian reached into his pocket and pulled out a $100 bill. He snapped it out straight.
Sweetheart, I'll make you a deal. If you can make a bucket of water appear and dump over Christian's head, I'll give you this.
I'll add in 10, laughed Lissa. Jill looked stunned, but I suspected it was because Adrian had called her sweetheart. I took Adrian for granted so often that it was easy to forget he really was a hot guy. Christian pushed Jill toward the door.
Ignore them. They're just jealous because spirit users can't go charging into battle like we can.
He knelt down to Lissa's height on the floor and gave her a quick kiss.
We were practicing in the lounge upstairs, but I've got to walk her back now. I'll see you tomorrow.
You don't have to, said Jill. I can get back there fine. I don't want to be any trouble.
Adrian stood up. You aren't. If anyone's going to step up and be the knight in shining armor here, it might as well be me. I'll take you back and leave the lovebirds to their lovebirding.
He gave Jill a grand bow.
Shall we?
Adrian, said Lissa, a sharp note in her voice.
Oh, come on, he said, rolling his eyes. I've got to head back anyway. You guys are of no use once curfew comes. And honestly, give me some credit here. Even I have boundaries.
He gave Lissa a meaningful look, one that told her she was an idiot for thinking he was going to hit on Jill. Lissa held his gaze for a few moments and realized he was right. Adrian was a scoundrel at times and had never made his interest in me a secret. But walking Jill home wasn't part of some grand seduction. He really was just being nice.
All right, said Lissa. I'll see you later. Nice meeting you, Jill.
You too, said Jill. She dared a smile at Christian. Thanks again.
You better show up for our next practice, he warned.
Adrian and Jill started to step out the door, just as Avery stepped through it.
Hey, Adrian,
Avery gave Jill a once-over.
Who's your jailbait?
Will you guys stop calling me that? Exclaimed Jill. Adrian pointed at Avery chastisingly.
Hush, I'll deal with you later, Lazar.
I certainly hope so, she said in a sing-song voice. I'll leave the door unlocked. Jill and Adrian left, and Avery sat down next to Lissa. She seemed animated enough to be drunk, but Lissa smelled no liquor on her. Lissa was rapidly learning that some part of Avery was always just vivacious and carefree, regardless of intoxication.
Did you really just invite Adrian to your room later?
Asked Lissa. She spoke teasingly but had been secretly wondering if something was going on between them. And yeah, that made two of us who wondered. Avery shrugged.
I don't know, maybe. Sometimes we hang out once you guys are all tucked into bed. You aren't going to be jealous, are you?
No, laughed Lissa. Just curious. Adrian's a good guy.
Oh? Asked Christian. Define good.
Avery held up her hand and began ticking items off with each finger.
He's devastatingly handsome, funny, rich, related to the queen.
You got your wedding colors picked out? Asked Lissa, still laughing.
Not yet, said Avery. I'm still testing the waters. I figured he'd be an easy notch on the Avery Lazar belt, but he's kind of hard to read.
I really don't want to be hearing this, Christian said.
Sometimes he acts like a love him and leave him type. Other times he mopes like some heartbroken romantic.
Lissa exchanged a knowing glance with Christian that Avery didn't catch while talking.
Anyway, I'm not here to talk about him. I'm here to talk about you and me busting out of here.
Avery threw her arm around Lissa, who nearly fell over.
Out of where? The dorm? No, this school. We're going off on a wild weekend to the royal court.
What? This weekend? Lissa felt like she was three steps behind, and I didn't blame her.
Why? Because it's Easter, and Her Royal Majesty thought it would be lovely if you could join her for the holiday.
Avery's tone was grand and high-pitched.
And since I've been hanging out with you, Dad's decided I'm on good behavior now.
Poor oblivious bastard, murmured Christian.
So he said I can go with you. Avery glanced at Christian.
You can too, I guess. The Queen said Lyssa could bring a guest. In addition to me, of course.
Lyssa looked into Avery's radiant face and didn't share her enthusiasm.
I hate going to court. Tatiana just goes on and on, giving what she thinks is useful advice for me. It's always boring and miserable now.
Lyssa didn't add that she'd once found court fun, when I'd gone with her.
That's because you haven't gone with me yet. It'll be a blast. I know where all the good stuff is, and I bet Adrian will come too. He can push his way into anything. It'll be like a double date.
Slowly, Lyssa began to acknowledge that this might be fun. She and